If you're hearing this, it means tickets are now on sale for our streaming Cybactacular.
That's what we're calling the streaming show of our Star Trek V review that we toured last year. We filmed our Hollywood show, and it's going to be streaming on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the stream will be available for a couple of weeks after that. If you can't watch right at the premiere time. A couple of pieces of information about this. If you support us at MaximumFun.org/join and your membership is current, check your email inbox because Maximum Fun will have emailed you a promo code to get $5 off your ticket. And also, we have some VIP packages available that include a meet and greet with me and Adam. Those are going fast, so jump on that if you want a meet and greet VIP package. Again, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets for the streaming Cybactacular.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet.
Engage.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, a Star Trek podcast by two guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm your host, Adam Pranica.
I'm your other host, Ben Harrison.
Ben, what episode is this in the entire run?
This is episode 60.
Oh, God.
60 episodes down.
You look back at your life and you see 60 of these episodes. What does it mean? What have we done?
I think the great thing is that we haven't made any mistakes on any episodes.
Nothing. 100% success rate.
Nothing we regret, nothing we wish we could have done differently. It's been a good run. Well, this is also the last episode, am I right?
We have a very special announcement to make.
Yeah, we'll just hang it up after this.
The final episode of The Greatest Generation. I think that would really break some hearts if we just decided
to hang it up very abruptly. It's like quitting singing Amazing Grace right in the middle of it. I'm just like, no!
It would be exactly like that, Ben.
Yeah.
You know who would be angry?
Who?
It's America's radio sweetheart, Jesse Thorne.
Yeah.
Owner-operator of the Maximum Fun Network.
Yeah.
I've never seen him angry. Would that anger him?
Yeah, I've seen him angry.
Oh, no.
Not a man I would ever want to have mad at me, so I suppose we should probably finish doing the show.
Yeah, guess so. How hard is that? Not quite so hard as it was for you to get through this episode, right, Ben? See, that's a world-class transition.
Oh, yeah.
World-class pivot to show. I stuck the landing.
Yeah.
This is becoming a speech.
You're the captain's.
I feel like I would have compared that to Mission Log, but I feel like we've pulled ahead in the trend, at least in the segue department. I feel like we're the leader in the clubhouse, right?
You know, someone wrote in to our drunkshimoda@gmail.com email address and said, is it okay for me to go out and make fun of other Star Trek podcasts on your behalf that I think are doing a bad job compared to you? He or she actually wrote in and was like, do I have your permission?
To troll people?
Yeah. And I actually told them no. Like, I don't know. I have a great amount of respect for anyone who would humiliate themselves in the way that we have for 60 yeah. episodes. First of all, there was a time early on when I would have wanted to hold all the other podcasts underwater until the bubbles stopped.
But that was the jealousy of an insecure podcast that didn't have a ton of listeners.
Yeah.
And not that we have a ton now, but we have an audience, and that's what we really wanted.
Is it what we really wanted, Ben?
Well, I think that we weren't being honest with ourselves. Yeah, I think it wasn't what we consciously wanted, but I think unconsciously. Yeah, we really obliterated our segue, didn't we?
Yeah, we took a great pivot and just destroyed it.
We don't even need that segue.
This is becoming a speech.
You're the captain, sir. You're entitled.
Not entitled to ramble on about something everyone knows.
Let's talk about Season 3, Episode 13, Deja Q.
The Enterprise is in orbit of Braille 4, another planet with 4 in the name.
It's a planet with a lot of, like, the mountains come in dots and slashes.
Yeah.
little groupings of dots.
Yeah.
That's a little Braille reference, Ben.
Yeah. I was going to try and move past it.
It's how people with compromised sight are able to read.
Right.
And I'm not sure if you knew this.
Well, speaking of compromised sight, there's an asteroid that's going to crash into this planet. That's a that's like an episode 3 level greatest gen transition right there.
So an asteroid's about to crash into Brielle 4, and Brielle 4 assembles a group of oil rig drillers. The best of their world.
You got Bruce Willis, you got Ben Affleck, you got
a cantankerous Keith David who's dropping quips.
The fate of the planet is in the hands of a bunch of retards I wouldn't trust with a potato gun.
Oh, it's fun with Keith David around.
Oh, yeah.
Do we have to actually talk about this episode, or can we just keep bullshitting like idiots for the rest of the time?
I know it's pretty, baby, but I didn't take it out for air. Is that our first Requiem for a Dream reference on our pod?
Impossible to say for sure, but yeah. It might be. Their moon is like gone out of whack and is going to crash into their planet. Its orbit is at its perigee is low enough that it's dragging atmosphere, which provides friction, which is causing the moon to slow down, which for anybody that has read a sentence or two on orbital mechanics knows is a bad thing. And this actually
that checks out.
Have you read the Neal Stephenson book? I think it's called Seven Eves. I'm not sure exactly how you're supposed to pronounce it, but I think it's Seven Eves.
I have not. No.
It's his most recent novel as of this recording that I'm aware of. And it's literally about the moon breaking up in orbit over the Earth, and they have, like, you know, 2 years or something to figure out a way to preserve humanity. And it's like a like the history of that, and then checks back in thousands of years later to like see what happened to the survivors. It's a really awesome book.
That sounds like fun.
The premise is like this episode exactly, though. It's
why don't you mail me that book, like without a note or anything, just sort of like a threat? That's how we send each other packages, right?
I would. I bought it on iPad, so
that's fine. You can just send the iPad.
Okay. Oh, okay. Yeah. Sure.
That's convenient.
I'm sure one of our listeners will anonymously mail it to you. Don't worry. Did I say listeners? I meant viewers. I'm sorry.
Please.
So the moon is coming out of orbit, and the Enterprise is going to try
this
and do
this podcast is a mess.
It's a disaster. Every part of this podcast is coming apart at the rails.
You look at this podcast and it's garbage. Just a pile of crap garbage. Criminal element on this podcast, let me tell you.
Believe me, if the media wasn't so corrupt, this would be a much better podcast, but the media has been very unfair to me. They've spun everything I've said out and made it seem much worse than it actually is.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not even sure who that Trump character is supposed to be at this point.
Like all of our impressions, they're getting worse by the episode.
So what they're trying to do is tractor beam this hunk of rock that's going to kill all these people. To put some more spin on it so that it'll stay in a stable orbit and not crush the planet. And they're trying this and failing at it. When who should show up but
Q.
Nude Q.
Red alert.
Gotta think that that if you can design the corporeal body that you inhabit, you'd probably give yourself a great big dick, right, Ben?
Yeah, I mean, he did seem to have some amount of agency in what he wound up being when he was ejected by the continuum.
Look, I don't want to get all mission log about this scene because we don't typically do that, but I did read some show notes about it.
Yeah.
And John Delancey performed this scene naked because they couldn't fashion a cover-up that would work on camera.
Really?
Yeah.
How? Why couldn't they? They can fashion it for everything else. Maybe he's just so hung that they, like, none of the standard skin color banana hammocks that they usually use would work.
Yeah, the triple XL Merkin wasn't going to do it. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah,
so he walked a set, opened the robe, and there he was.
Let it pile up on the floor by his feet.
Does that make you like John DeLancey more?
There's a lot about this episode that makes me like John DeLancey more.
Yes.
I think he brings a tour de force with his performance in this episode.
Most def. So he's hovering above the floor naked and then drops to the ground. And he quickly explains that he's been banished from the continuum. And he's asking Picard for asylum.
Yeah, his higher-ups have said that he's too much of a troublemaker, the trickster god that he is.
Everyone believes that as pretty viable.
Yeah, but Picard has no rope to even be at the end of when it comes to Q. So, like, he's just like, I don't care about anything that's happening in your life, Q. Why are you here? Go away.
And also, they're in the middle of sort of a really important mission with a lot of lives at stake.
Yeah, there's like literally billions that could die if Q distracts them to the point of not completing their mission.
It's like when you're at work and like the boss brings his kid by to sell Girl Scout cookies and you're like in the middle of a really important task.
Yeah.
Like, God damn it. I just need to keep working.
Yeah.
I'll buy the Samoas later.
Yeah. And then the Girl Scout's gone and you're like, fuck, I didn't get any cookies ordered. It's not like I know Girl Scouts. That was my one opportunity. I'm not going to go out and try and meet Girl Scouts. Who does that? They get Q, they put him in some clothes, and this is like, it's like half a lampshade shy of being a Ferengi uniform.
Yeah,
he's like,
that's
he's,
fair.
He's rocking a lot of nuck, and it's like all of the cut to it is Ferengi like, and they basically just have Worf like walk him down to the brig.
Yeah, Worf perp walks him, and it just enjoys the hell out of it.
Yeah,
it's great.
Q zinged Worf when he showed up with a line that really made me laugh out loud, which was,
"Eat any good books lately?"
I laughed so hard at that.
More and more, I feel like Worf is like the Larry David figure of the show. Like, he is totally Worf in Curb Your Enthusiasm. He's constantly failing. He's constantly getting into misunderstandings with people.
Yeah,
people are ridiculing him left and right. It really shades his character for me when I see him on screen and I just hear the tuba music.
Yeah, and he's always walking around with those big ridiculous white shoes.
Yeah, he's driving the Prius to work.
Yeah, Worf is always like trying to clear his throat because he's got a pube in there in the back of his mouth.
Oh man. Oh, that the Palestinian chicken that the replicator makes is delicious.
Yeah, yeah. What do they do to that chicken? It's so good.
Oh man. This episode is a disaster.
Worf goes back to his quarters and JB Smoove is there with his whole family.
Let's just talk about things that we like instead of this episode.
But they basically confirm that Q is in fact human, and Q convinces Picard to let him like work with the geek team on trying to solve this giant crashing rock problem, because while Q is not like a trained Starfleet officer, he does come from an interesting vantage point, which is that he has had a deeply perfect understanding of physics in the past. Like the first suggestion he throws out to them is like, oh, like if we're going to move a big rock, why don't we just change the gravitational constant of the universe? And they're like, oh, what a good idea, Q. Why didn't we think of that?
Yeah. It's easy when you're a god.
Yeah. But it does give Geordi a good idea to do something with the warp field, and so they're off to the races. Like they've got a better plan, and so like they're getting some work done. But Q is really not taking to his humanness well. Like he like pulls something in his back and has to have the doctor come down and do an adjustment on him. I wouldn't have figured Dr. Crusher for like a chiropractic type.
You mean a fake doctor?
Yeah, she totally straightens him out.
Yeah. And then, we just lost 30 listeners there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there's some really fun character development here as Q acclimates himself to being a human being.
Yeah, he's like getting used to the idea of eating, getting used to the idea of pooing, getting used to the idea of sleep. At one point when he's in the brig, like a glowing beach ball like slips into the ship and hovers over him. And that goes unexplained for the time being. But they're working hard in engineering, and he tells Data, like, hey, like, there's something wrong with me. And they work out that perhaps he's hungry. So they go to 10 forward.
Yeah, it's weird that they stick Data on him. Like, who's the one person on the crew that can tell Q what it's like to be human?
Yeah.
Data.
Yeah, I mean, I think they probably put Data on him because Data is not going to be, like, quite as agitated by Q. Because Q's right. Fucking annoying.
Oh, I don't think so.
I mean, he's actively annoying everybody yeah. around him. So Data's a little bit more immune to that. It's like a type of radiation that Data can handle and the rest of the crew can't.
Yeah, well put.
They're in 10 forward. Q puts in an order for
10 chocolate sundaes.
Based on Data explaining that when Counselor Troy is sad, she orders a chocolate sundae.
Hey, Ben, how do you write for women characters?
I think of a man, and I take away reason and accountability.
You give them food fixations, right?
Yeah, you don't want them to have much dimensionality to them, you know?
No. No, yep, keep yep. it simple.
Yeah. Well, what you have to realize is that women will be playing these characters, and their feeble minds just can't handle any kind of nuance or subtlety.
Right.
It is the guiding principle of a Starfleet base. Have you not find it within yourself to stand up, tell the truth? You don't deserve to wear that uniform.
So they're there in 10 forward, and this cloud of gas shows up at the planet. And another glowing beach ball comes right through the front window there and envelops Q in like an energy field. And he's clearly in a lot of pain because he's trying to brush it off of his legs like mud that got splattered on him.
Electrical mud.
Yeah, or like he's got ants in his pants kind of a deal. And Data keeps like trying to reach in and grab him, but getting shocked and pulling his hands back. And it's the first time in a long time that we've seen Data like shy away from an opportunity to have one of his arms blown off by an electrical pulse.
Yeah, but at the same time, he rushes in there.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't just stand back and watch.
Yeah. So maybe he's just he's buddying up to this phenomenon. Geordi winds up figuring out a way to modulate the shields to prevent this attack. And as they're recovering, they're getting ready for the moon to be at its perigee when they're going to try this new gambit that they worked out with Q's help. And at the same time, Q is explaining to them that this cloud is a intelligent species called the Calamarain. And they're like pissed at him for queuing around at them. And they finally have an opportunity to exact sweet, sweet revenge.
You know, the Calamarain is my favorite appetizer to order when I go out for apps.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Nice, like a nice aioli, a glass of rosé, squeeze the lemon on them before you tuck into them.
Doesn't that sound nice?
Something so simple and joyful about that.
I mean, I'd never get electrocuted by a plate of those, right?
No.
Pretty safe to eat, I'd say.
Unless they're made of secret pig buttholes.
No.
Do you know about that?
No.
There's a whole, I think it's a This American Life.
Oh, Ben, don't. I don't want to know. Is that really the truth?
Well, it's unclear, but there is definitely.
Is that why I can't stop eating them?
There's a good reason to believe that sometimes when you order calamari, it's actually secretly pig buttholes that have been sold as calamari by like unscrupulous seafood vendors.
I am mortified at the thought.
Well, they go so far as to test it on the show where they like make some pig buttholes
the way you would make calamari. And they're like, yeah, it tastes just like calamari.
Whoa. I stopped eating squid and calamari because something changed in me. I determined that they are smart creatures of a higher intelligence.
Yeah.
But it sounds like I can keep eating pig butt, so that's good.
Well, pigs are pretty smart themselves. But
oh, no. I have to stop eating pig butt now, too?
Yeah. Sorry, dude.
Oh, man. What am I going to dip in that aioli?
My love is a pig butt, long in jail for that, which longer nurse the disease.
So the rock is getting close to the surface of the planet, and they're like, well, we got to drop the shields so that we can do this warp field and tractor beam shit. But these calamarain are going to attack us when we do. So I guess we're just going to have to run the risk. So they do it, and they're getting some positive results. Like Q comes down to engineering, and Geordi like puts him on a task, and Q's completely baffled by the idea of being within a command structure, which doesn't make a lot of sense given the fact that his superiors in the continuum have just kicked his ass out. Like, he should know what it's like to be bossed around, but he acts like it's a total new one on him.
Beverly Crusher feels the same way. She doesn't like acting within a command structure either.
Yeah.
There are a lot alike that way.
She's not bucking the system quite as much in this episode, though.
Yeah.
They get the rock pushed a little bit, but not enough to get it out of harm's way, and the Calamarain start attacking, and this is when they get that beach ball into the engineering section. It envelops Q. Data like tries to break him out and gets shocked and like knocked down on the floor. Brent Spiner always does a great job with these, where like he goes stiff in like a standing position and like falls flat on the floor
with like, his arm sticking out Frankenstein-y.
That shit's gotta hurt, right?
Yeah, that doesn't look comfortable.
He really commits to it, though.
Data forgets that thing that if you see someone electrocuted, you gotta grab something wooden, like a rake or something, and poke the guy away from the electrical charge. He doesn't do that.
Yeah.
Wooden like a rake. That was where my mind went.
God, so stupid.
So they're down in the six bay with Data's head all, like they took the engine block out of his head and they have it set on the table next to him. And Geordi's going to town on him with a socket wrench. And Q is being super selfish here. He's like, God, that fucking hurt. They're like, hey, Data just saved your life, okay? Show some fucking respect. And then he's sort of like, this takes him through a little journey. Like, he's really baffled by the fact that Data did save his life. He's like, why would he have done that? I wouldn't do that for anybody. And that introspection leads him to recognize that he is a coward. And he doesn't, when he looks at that man in the mirror, he doesn't like what he sees.
And he appears powerless to change his ways.
He's looking to make that change. This is the stupidest episode.
I think we have cratered. I think the moon has crashed into our show. So Q decides that that he can't go on living this way. Decides that maybe suicide's the only answer. So he jakes a shuttlecraft.
The ship really needs to get better launch clearance procedures in place. You can apparently just get in a shuttlecraft and fly out without clearing it with anybody.
It's like the shuttle bay is a valet stand and all the keys are just out and unlocked. Take any shuttle you want.
Yeah. They didn't show that scene where Pee-wee pulled in the shuttlecraft and pulled out a 78-foot long chain and wrapped it around a animatronic clown.
Yeah. So Q's out there in a previa, is he in a bunk bed or is he in a previa?
He's in a previa.
Good choice. I respect Q for that.
And so Picard is like, fuck, I kind of hate to have to do this, but that's actually a really nice previa. So let's beam it back on board the ship.
Really low miles.
Yeah.
Not a dent on her.
Yeah, the paint job is pretty immaculate. Like, none of the kids have barfed in the back yet.
Yeah.
It's in good shape, you know. Good resale value on that Prev. So they try to beam it back, and no worky. And we cut to the inside of the Previa, and a second Q, like, helps himself aboard.
Q!
And he's wearing the same dumb Ferengi costume that Q Prime is wearing.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Corbin Burnson.
Should we call this guy Malibu Q?
Absolutely.
I think he's Malibu Q.
He is Malibu Q.
And he's like, he admits that he is the Q that recommended Q Prime for discommendation. And the fact that Q Prime has done this selfless act where he's going to sacrifice himself to the Calamarain to allow the Enterprise to save all these people on the planet below is seen as sufficiently redemptive to mean that Q can have his powers back. And this is a big, big victory for him. So he reappears on the bridge of the Enterprise in full mariachi regalia.
Full family Mexican restaurant entertainment regalia.
Yeah. And he snaps his fingers and everybody gets a cigar. He's trying to make a big party of it, and Picard is like not having much of it. So
he snaps a couple of babes around Riker.
Oh yeah, Riker's like,
I don't need your fantasy women.
Oh, you're so stolid. You weren't like that before the beard.
I got my juices out with some of those weird looking aliens on the planet below.
I told you I'm not into submissives.
Yeah, I'm in my refractory period, so I'm not even going to bend the rules. So those babes get beamed over to Worf, and, you know, Worf is married to Kalar in his mind, so he's also sure not into it. And
he also grabs the calamari and sticks them in his hand. And
oh, yeah, he, like, blows them away like a little puff of smoke, which was a good effect, I thought.
Yeah, we should say, like, the effect on this electrical cloud looks great.
All of the shots of the ship and the planet and the moon, all of that stuff looked awesome in this episode.
Which only serves to underscore how terrible these Briel aliens are. Like, they didn't even try to cook the meatloaf.
No, yeah.
For these poor people.
Yeah, that is, they troweled on raw veal right onto their faces.
Yeah. Uncooked turkey sausage.
Yeah. A little bit of breadcrumbs, a little bit of sage, a little bit of oregano.
Yeah. No one likes a turkey loaf.
No. Nor do they like their hooded sweatshirt costumes.
Tomok Angelad at Tanagra.
Moms. Can't live with them. Can't find a great gift for them. It's madness. And it's the same every year. Mother's Day comes around and it's like, what's it going to be this year? Another robe? Another candle? Slippers? A sweater? Flowers? We've got to do better than that, right? Well, you can, and it's actually the best gift you could possibly give a loved one. An Aura frame. Now, we have a policy to only do ads on our show for things that we actually like and use, and I gotta tell you, the Aura frame is probably the best gift I've ever given. The folks I've given an Aura frame to love it. And I love it too, because when you give an Aura frame, you're not just giving a person a bunch of old pictures, you're giving them new pictures every time you send one to it. Right now, Aura has a great sale for Mother's Day. Viewers can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com, and the code is SCARVES at checkout to show your support for the show. Terms and conditions apply. When I was growing up, I didn't have anyone to tell me about personal grooming. I had to learn these things on my own. So I'm here to save you some embarrassment and recommend the grooming tools that I use. The products from Manscaped. Now, this is a company that constantly has its mind on your bush. Imagine the meetings they have. Imagine the pictures they have in their PowerPoint presentations. Now imagine your junk looking its best thanks to the Lawnmower 5.0. This thing is the latest Bonch trimming technology. With two interchangeable heads, a standard one for taking just a little off the top, and a new foil blade to go smooth wherever your heart desires. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
Q gets the idea that he's not welcome anymore on the ship, and with a way to leave now that he has his Q powers back, he decides to show his gratitude to the crew by fixing their moon problem.
Yeah, moon problem solved, and he says, "Data, since you were kind enough to show me around and show me how to use the bathroom and everything, I'm going to leave you with a little parting gift." And Data gets concerned for a second that he's going to turn him human, which, Data wants to get there on his own. And he's like, no, it's much, much more elegant than that. And so Q snaps his fingers and disappears, and Data bursts out laughing. That's a genuinely funny scene where Data doesn't know why he's laughing or what about. But he's like really genuinely laughing. This is Brent Spiner at his best.
Capital A.
Amazing.
Yeah. There's a physicality to Brent Spiner's acting that, you wouldn't think that he'd have much of an opportunity to go there as a robot person.
Yeah.
But all these little subtle details, like the passing out with his arms outstretched, the massive vaudevillian laughter that he emotes, like, he does a great job.
Yeah,
it's, again, like, this is another example where it could be really cheesy. Like, he plays it so big and broad that it should be, but I don't know.
Somehow he sold it. Yeah.
Did you like this episode, Ben? Hey, I think I know the answer to that. I love this episode.
I like John Delancey, and I like his performance so much, and I just feel like
You like his great big dick, don't you?
Yeah. I mean, you can tell when he's rocking that nuck that he's got the honker that Q would give a human male if he had to inhabit that body.
More like J, am I right? Capital J.
Yeah, so that's how I feel.
All right, I think we know your feelings on the character.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Our first priority one message comes from Brian McRae for his brother Paul.
Oh.
That's pretty nice, right?
To my big brother, you'll always be my drunk Shimoda. Sounds like somebody had a brother pulling Isolinia ships out of his childhood the whole time.
Oh, jeez. I think we can tell from the message which one's the younger brother and which one's the older. I find that the younger brother is typically the drunk Shimoda, right?
Oh, well, this guy's saying the big brother's the drunk Shimoda.
Oh, man. How does that happen?
Yeah. Well, maybe it's like he's projecting Shimoda.
I guess.
What do you say we sing our signature drunk Shimoda song for Paul as a celebration of this Jumbotron message?
Okay.
What song is that, Ben? Happy birthday!
Is it a birthday? Who knows?
Well, Paul, hopefully it's your birthday. If not, I apologize, Ryan.
Save this for your birthday and listen to it again.
Yeah.
Then you get like twice as much Shimoda for your money.
Oh, boy.
Thank you for supporting the show, guys, and thank you for listening.
Our next Priority One message is to Brad and Sam from Adam. And I don't remember sending this in. Pretty sure this isn't me, Ben.
It's a different Adam.
This is going to require a bit of translation. Ben, yeah. For our listeners' benefit, I will be reading the English version. And without giving you any lead time at all, you will be my Klingon translator. Are you ready?
Okay.
Let's begin. The first line of the message is, Brad, your cat Ella is the devil.
Brad Ella Vilgro Velquarg.
Sam, Wisconsin cheese curds look and taste like gach.
Lech ich mun rur gach num wulb noch. Wisconsin curds.
I hope Riker does to your moms what Picard does to the boy. Oh, no.
Nukta e Picard hod. Lod hom ta moms. Riker e vutul.
Love, Adam.
Bang, Adam.
I love that love is bang in Klingon.
That's pretty fun.
Yeah.
I hope my pronunciation was okay. I'm not sure if any of you guys are native speakers. I'm terribly embarrassed that I skipped a lot of Klingon class in high school, so my pronunciation has always left a little bit to be desired.
I really did a bad thing to you, Ben. I'm sorry. Ben, probably a lot of targets here. A lot of soft targets.
That's what you call a target-rich environment.
For your Shimoda gun. Who is your drunk Shimoda? Incredible.
Drunk Shimoda!
I'm going to go with the Briel scientists that they're in contact with. They seem to be there only to do FaceTime. Like, there's a lot of people running around in the background doing science, theoretically. But, the Enterprise is the only game in town. Like, they're not actually doing anything there. You know?
Yeah, why don't you help your own cause?
They say they're evacuating people from the coasts, but it's like, guys, like, can you put a rocket in orbit or something? Like,
do you have any oil drillers?
Yeah. Get Bruce Willis. Get Liv Tyler.
Get Keith David.
Get Steve Buscemi, goddammit.
Yeah, agreed. They seem kind of helpless. Is this a violation of the Prime Directive, also?
No,
it seems like... Why don't you let nature take its course?
Well, it's like a planet that they're already in contact with. Presumably, yeah. This is a post-warp species. But I don't know, like, what about the last planet where they're doing all the terrorism?
I don't know. They just sort of pick their moments, don't they?
Yeah. The Prime Directive doesn't always apply.
Ben, 90s television star Corbin Burnson is on this episode, and he chose to be uncredited. I don't know why. He's a massive star in the 90s, in the early 90s especially. I imagine he wouldn't be there unless he was a big fan. He's my Shimoda for choosing to become uncredited for his really great performance as Malibu Q. Like, yeah. This is something to be proud of. I don't get it.
Yeah, I thought it was well played. Like, he played it he played it as Q-y as John DeLancey did, which I don't think is necessarily easy. Those are necessarily easy shoes to fill.
Yeah. I think most of the time we choose a Shimoda based on if they're having the most fun or doing something zany and wacky. And I guess Malibu Q would fit that description due to his actions, but I'm going to actually give it to the actor just for that decision as making a decision I don't understand.
I am the cutest of all. There are four lights.
What is coming up for our next episode, Ben?
Our next episode is season 3, episode 14,
a matter of perspective. Riker is suspected of murdering a respected scientist who had accused the Enterprise officer of seducing his wife.
This is going to happen all the time, right?
Yeah.
It's not just an accusation, though. Like, Riker seduced this guy's wife as he seduces everyone's wife.
Right. That's what wives get done to them.
So this is the episode where Riker is executed for being a homewrecker? That's how I remember it.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Gotta see it.
Yep.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
People can support our show or, based on listening to this episode, retract support for our show. Withdraw funding from our show by going to MaximumFund.org/donate.
Yeah, please don't withdraw support, though.
We are professional podcasters now, which means we can't participate in the podcast Olympics.
Right. Yeah, we're unless we are like podcast NBA, and then for some reason we can, right?
Yeah, I think that's how it works.
I don't get it. It's an honor to be listener supported show. We make this for you guys, and when you guys respond with financial support, it really makes it feel worth it.
It also keeps us relatively ad-free, too,
right.
Which I think is appreciated by most people.
Right, and like, I don't think that we can promise to be 100% ad-free, but we are not going to go the way of so many of the big-name podcasts that are, like, almost all ads now. Like, I feel like so much of the time I am hitting that skip 30 button these days on some of the bigger shows, and I'm like unsubscribing from shows because they're getting so larded down with fucking ads for, you know, financial services.
I would love to tell our listeners about Casper mattresses. I just don't have a way to do it at this point.
Yeah.
It's a real shame.
But we appreciate the support.
Certainly do.
That helps the show in many ways that you can't even imagine. You can also talk about the show online. We use the hashtag GreatestGen on Twitter, as do many of our listeners.
You can sing the Drunk Shimoda song at your local karaoke night.
Oh my God. If that becomes a thing, I'll die a happy man.
Yeah. If you do it, you have to send proof. You can't just email us and say that you've done it.
Yeah. I am still riding high off the karaoke video. It's so great.
Yeah, it's one of the best.
You can follow Adam at Cut for Time or me at Benjamin R, AHR. You can also go to Facebook or Reddit. We've got subreddits. We've got Faces Books. We've got the whole social media game. Unlock. We should thank Dark Materia for our music.
The best music. Really, really just the greatest music there is for a Star Trek podcast.
Elevates the whole game. So classy. Everything about it provides glitz, glamour, Hollywood pizzazz. Amazing.
We'll see you next week, Ben. On another great episode.
Another great episode of The Greatest Generation. And a very seductive episode of The Greatest Generation. Incredible. Sad.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.